Well, welcome. Thank you for coming and joining us.
Thank you very much. My name is Matthew Davis. This is Steve Dvorak. We're very excited to be here today to discuss Survey LA with you. And we want to thank the commissioners for giving us this time to talk through this exciting effort.
As you know, Survey LA is a massive and impressive undertaking. But one of the things I want the commissioners to take note of, and this will come through in Katie's comments, is the carefulness with which the city of Los Angeles has made the most of every survey dollar available to them, and the carefulness with which they've crafted creative survey approaches. This isn't a case of just throwing a big pot of money at a conventional survey effort. They've really made an impressive effort to do something a little bit different. And I want to emphasize at the outset of this presentation that this should be very conversational here today. Please feel free to interject with any questions as they arise. Our goal is to make this informational presentation as useful to the commissioners as possible. And I think to that end, the more conversational it is, the better. Let's see. Then first, just one slide, a little bit of background on Architectural Resources Group. We were founded in San Francisco in 1980, and we've since expanded up and down the West Coast with opening an office in Pasadena in 2003 in conjunction with our work at Pasadena City Hall, and opening a Portland office in 2007, in part as an outgrowth of our work at Oregon State Hospital. We have about a 50-person firm, and we're generally divided into these three disciplines: planning, architecture, and conservation. And you see that the bullets are just some of the different classifications of folks we have on staff, from historians and certified planners to architects, design professionals, lead AP professionals, conservators, and even an in-house conservation lab. I myself am an architectural historian and preservation planner in the Portland office. And with that, I wanted to introduce Katie Horak. She's a senior associate and architectural historian in our Pasadena office, and she is our undisputed survey guru. And she's led ARG's involvement in Survey LA since 2008. Take it away, Katie.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Matt, and thank you to all of you. I'm really delighted to be here. I'd like to second Matt's thanks for the time to come and share Survey LA with you. When I first started working at ARG in 2008, the first project I worked on was the pilot survey for Survey LA, and now, 6 years later, I'm still working on this project. It has been a real labor of love for me. I'm a native Angeleno. I've done surveys in many other cities, but this has been truly a wonderful professional experience. I'm really happy to be here to present it to you. And because the project's been going on now for so long, we really do have some perspective on what has really worked and what we might have done differently at the beginning if we'd known what we know now. So happy to share those lessons with you. And as Matt said, feel free to interject at any time and ask questions. So Los Angeles has not always had the best reputation for the care of its cultural and architectural resources. This is one of our greatest Art Deco buildings that was demolished in the late 1960s, and we really have lost so many of our architectural icons, and many very publicly, like this building, but there are many others that were lost without anybody really noticing it. And the city had not been widely surveyed before Survey LA. Only 15% of the entire city had been surveyed. So there really was a sense from the city and preservation advocates that we just didn't know what our architectural heritage was. The city is so large. There needed to be a citywide survey to understand what we have. So the Getty Conservation Institute, which we're very lucky to have in Los Angeles, initiated a Los Angeles Historic Resources Report, where they gathered practitioners and city staff and Getty staff to think about how could we actually accomplish a citywide survey in a city as large as Los Angeles. So they initiated this report in 2004, and by 2008, the citywide survey, which they called Survey LA, was born. So Survey LA is a comprehensive citywide survey, and it's very lucky to be funded by the J. Paul Getty Foundation with a $2.5 million matching grant. So city has provided $2.5 million in matching funds to fund the survey. So there's been a tremendous commitment from the city of Los Angeles. This project did start in 2008 when the economy crashed, and I think a lot of us were worried that there was momentum and then we would lose the project, but the city has continued their commitment even in economic difficult times. So the surveys are completed by consultants. There's only one full-time city staff who manages this project. Her salary is actually funded by the Getty Grant. This is Janet Hansen. She is a Portland native. She was very excited to hear I was coming up here to present this to you. And she has done a tremendous job managing a survey of this size. And a key component of this project is the database that is used in the field, which has a GIS framework. At the time, that was really groundbreaking, and now it's kind of hard to imagine doing a survey without GIS. And I'll talk a little bit about that database and how it's used in the field. And I call it the FIGS. It's the Field Guide Survey System. So you'll hear me say FIGS quite a bit throughout this presentation. So Los Angeles is really big. I gave a similar presentation to the New York Landmarks Preservation Commission, and there were sort of audible gasps as they looked at this graphic and they saw Manhattan kind of shoved down in the corner. So it's a really big city, 466 square miles and almost a million legal parcels, so 880,000 parcels to survey, and a tremendous range and complexity of resources dating to the 18th century all the way to, obviously, the present day. The city, the scope of the survey is to 1980, so that's pretty late. So we're evaluating resources that are just 30-something years old at this point, and the purpose of that was because the city knew it would take such a long time to complete the survey, they did not want the findings to be obsolete by the time the survey was over, just have to start all over again. So we're looking at resources that go all the way up to 1980. And everything is surveyed. So landscapes, buildings, historic districts, and what we call non-parcel resources. So the lower center photograph is a photograph of an air raid siren. So we do survey objects, sculpture, monuments, and of course built resources like individual buildings and historic districts. So there are two major phases of the survey. The first phase, which commenced in 2008, was the initiation phase, which included the development of the citywide historic context statement, which is a really integral part of the project, which I'll discuss in a little bit more detail. The initiation of the public participation program, which is also very important to the survey. The development of the field database, which was undertaken by the Getty and a private consulting firm that develops databases, and then the completion of the pilot surveys. And the purpose of the pilot surveys was really not to gather useful data, it was to test the efficacy of the database and make sure it actually did work in the field. And then phase two, once the initiation phase was complete, was implementation, which was supposed to be 5 years, and now it's been about 6 years, and we have another year and a half to go. So by the end of the project, it will have taken about 7 years to survey all 880,000 parcels. And the field surveys are phased by community plan area, and there are 37 total CPAs in Los Angeles, and those are lumped together into 9 survey groups. So those are group 1, survey group 2, et cetera. We're currently just wrapping up group 7 and just starting group 8, so just one group to go, and we will be finished, which is hard to believe. So just to give you a sense of how the city decided to organize and prioritize the survey areas, this is the city, and you can see the various community plan areas shaded, these various colors. So the survey was organized in accordance with the community plan update of the general of the land use element of the general plan. So the city was undertaking a massive updating of their general plan. They wanted the surveys to really inform the update of the community plan areas. So the survey findings would then be rolled out in addition to or along with the updates of the general plan, which really would integrate historic preservation planning very nicely into the planning process because survey findings are presented at the same time as the rest of the general plan, and it really takes into account what historic resources are in those general plan areas. The red areas that you see kind of scattered throughout, those were the pilot survey areas, and those were identified as such because the council districts in those areas were lobbying to have their areas be the first areas to be surveyed. So there's no, they were sort of arbitrary, the way they were selected was sort of arbitrary, it was just that there was some political lobbying for them to be sort of the first areas to be surveyed. So the way that the surveys are actually completed, the Department of City Planning's Office of Historic Resources is the manager of the project. Like I said, there's one staff person who is fully committed to this project. They have a number of volunteers and interns who work on this project all the time. It's been sort of a good thing for our local universities. A lot of our students are working on the project in City Hall with Janet Hansen. And then one thing that I think they didn't anticipate at the very beginning, but certainly has been the case, is that they need so much support from the systems and GIS division, because there's so much data to manage, reports to populate, and just working with the teams, making sure that all bugs are worked through. So we have at least two systems and GIS staff people who work on SurveyLA, at least 60, maybe 75% of their time. So it's been a lot of work for system staff. And they are not trained in historic preservation, but they really have, I think, grown to love this project, which is great. So for each survey, a lead consultant manages the survey team. The city has an on-call, a group of on-call consultants that they can then issue RFPs, and they will select a consulting team to do the actual surveys. Because the survey areas are so large, one firm can't do the entire survey. So there's always a pretty large team of maybe two or three sub-consultants working together with the prime consultant. And this has really changed the face of consulting in Los Angeles too, because now we're working with all of our former competitors. We're all collaborators. So it really has changed sort of the way that we all work together in Los Angeles, which has been a positive thing. And we do list the interns here too. We wouldn't be able to do all this work without interns, and the city actually does require that we have interns on the team. Another great way to bring students sort of into the survey process, we have actually ended up hiring a number of our interns as permanent staff. So SurveyLA has been a very good job producer in Los Angeles for people in the historic preservation fields. So one component that's not shown in the org chart before is the sort of participation of the public, which is a very important part of the survey. It really wouldn't be a very robust survey if we weren't getting feedback from the public about what they feel their historic resources are in the city. It really creates an investment with people in the city. So they rolled out in the initiation phase a very robust public participation program, including a Survey LA video that ran on public access television, a Speakers Bureau program to get people out into the various neighborhoods talking about the survey, brochures in, I think, almost 10 different languages, a volunteer program. And then what you see here is this historic resources identification form, which is a form available online that asks, what is your historic Los Angeles? What do you think is your historic resource in your neighborhood? And people can fill this form out, give it back to the city, and then that data is put into the GIS database, so it's available to surveyors as they're out in the fields. So this really ensures that the survey is not just a survey of beautiful architecture, it's also a survey of places that have social importance, cultural importance in various neighborhoods. It's been a very successful public participation program. This is a site called Mind Mixer, which many cities use it to sort of get ideas out into the public and let people participate. There's one for Survey LA, which is called My Historic LA, which puts questions out there to the public and lets them provide answers. So for instance, what places are important to the history of Asian Americans in Los Angeles? Or what is your favorite historical place in LA? Or what religious sites have shaped the history? So it really allows people to answer very specific questions and say, you know, there's this church in my neighborhood that's been there for 100 years. I think it's really important. So it poses very direct questions that gets people thinking about what their historic places are, which helps to fuel the survey. And then, of course, as the surveys have gone on, they've gotten a lot of really great press. They have a Facebook page that is continuously updated to let people know where the surveyors are. And then at the lower right, this is our survey team being interviewed by PBS. There's a really nice PBS spot that sort of telling the public what the survey is and how the data will be used. So it's been getting a lot of good press, which helps. So actually conducting the surveys, there's really no way to streamline the process of driving every street. We still have to do that. So what you see on the left is a map that we generated with the highlighted routes that say, okay, we drove this route, so we're going to highlight it yellow just to let us know. So we are driving every single street and then only recording things that we have identified as eligible for listing. And what you see on the bottom right is that's the tablet PC that we use in the fields. So there's a focus on recording only those resources that are eligible. So historic buildings that are not eligible, that have not been identified as significant, are not recorded in any way. So that really cuts down on the time it takes to survey the whole city when you're only focusing on things that are eligible. Resources are evaluated against National Register, California Register, and Los Angeles's local criteria. So we're looking at all three designation programs. And the FIGS database really does maximize field efficiencies and data management, because you have so many consultants working on this project. The database walks everybody through an evaluation the same way. So it's very standardized. So the data that's being collected is the same across the board, depending on who's working on it, which is very important. And then the reports are generated directly from the data. So for each survey group, there is a summary report that the consultants provide that says, this is what the area was, here's this general history, and here are our findings. But there are no survey forms, no inventory forms at all, which is really great. So it cuts down on the paper that, you know, we used to have survey reports that were thousands of pages. Now it's all generated by the data. So eventually people will be able to go online, go to the database themselves, and search for resources through the web.
Now, when you say, Katie, that you're only going to document resources that are eligible, how does that work with the 1980 time frame where maybe those aren't eligible yet? Are you guys trying to make a determination that it might be at some point?
We are, exactly. So there's a bit of projecting, thinking about which resources will be eligible in 10 years. Those are always very interesting conversations when we go through the review process with the city. Like, do you really think this will be eligible in 1980 or 1980s resources or 1970s resources? So there's a bit of projecting that goes on.
So yeah. You guys have to make a judgment call.
We do have to make a judgment call.
And are you really looking at eligible as far as architecture? And, I mean, wouldn't you have to look into the property a little bit more to know if it was eligible for other aspects of significance? So how does that work?
Absolutely. So, and that's where the public participation comes to play.
They're helping, sort of bringing your
exactly. Interest. And we always try to bring people into the survey team who know a lot about those areas. So we will often bring sort of area experts onto our team, people who have written books about the areas, who know a lot about the social and cultural history, so they can provide us with lists of buildings that are significant for those other reasons. Because obviously it is very easy to tell what the important architecture is, but how do we know when someone significant lived there? How do we know if an important event happened there? So the public participation is really key to that. And the citywide historic context statement is a very important part of the survey. Something that makes this sort of groundbreaking in a way is that all the evaluations being made in the field are being made against a historic context statement. So it's a context-driven survey. And it uses the National Register multiple property documentation approach. So resources are evaluated against contexts and themes. There are 9 overarching contexts and over 200 themes and sub-themes. So a big challenge at the beginning of this project is, how do you write a citywide historic context statement for a city as large and diverse as Los Angeles? And there was a lot of very long meetings talking about how do we do this. And ultimately, they decided not to write very long narrative context statements, but just focus on the data tables that are needed for the actual database. And at the end of the project, there will be narrative context that will be written based on the survey findings, because contexts really do sort of rely on what you're identifying in the field. They should be done concurrently, but you need those contexts and eligibility standards to do the work. So so there are very long data tables of historic contexts that are put into the FIGS database, and that helps the consultants do their actual evaluations in the field, and I'll go through that a little bit. But you know, at first I thought we need to write a context statement for each neighborhood and understand the neighborhood context. And really the NPD approach of looking at things based on context and theme was much more effective than writing sort of neighborhood-specific contexts. As I mentioned, we go to 1980, and everything is preloaded into the FIG, so all the contexts, the surveyors can select contexts based on drop-down menus. And we don't need to go through all of these, but just a sense of what the contexts are. We obviously have architectural and engineering at the bottom, but also industrial development, institutional development, commercial, residential, pre-annexation communities, early Spanish and Mexican colonial era settlement. So these are the various overarching contexts that something might be determined eligible under, and then the themes sort of come underneath those contexts. And this is what the FIGS looks like. This is what's on our tablets when we go out into the field. It looks like GIS because it has a GIS framework underneath everything. The great thing about GIS, and you all may know quite a bit about this, but you can actually store data in the parcels. So there's a lot of data that's already there before we even go into the field. So what you're seeing here, the shaded parcels on top of the aerial imagery, that's pre-existing information. So the blue shading is, those are properties that have already been surveyed. So that's a 1990 survey. Those findings are already in there so that when the surveyors go into the field, they can click on that parcel and see, okay, this was identified as a potential historic district in a 1990 survey. And we can then update that survey finding and have all that at our fingertips in the field, which is really useful. And then the green shading, where you see that little push pin, the green is public input. So it's called the OHR research layer. So anytime someone has provided information through My Historic LA or the public participation program, that data is in the FIG. So we can click on that parcel, and then you can see sort of at the bottom of that screen, there are data tables that tell us exactly what the public said about that property. This is the first screen that we see. We always put a photograph in first. There's always a photographic record, and then each screen that follows is the evaluation. And there are a lot of screens I'm not going to show you, but this is probably the most important one, which is the selection of contexts and themes. So the key year is auto-populated based on county assessor's data, so we automatically know what year the building was built. And then the surveyor then selects a context under which to evaluate the resource. And then each subsequent drop-down populates based on sort of the top. So you can then select a subcontext, then a theme, then a sub-theme, then property type, and property subtype. And then the bottom where it says geographic location, area significance, and criteria, that all selects, that self-selects based on your context selection, so that auto-populates. So this is telling us that, you know, we are evaluating something under the Art Deco sub-theme. The database actually tells us they're pretty sparse citywide with concentrations in Hollywood, downtown, and mid-city. It would be significant under the area of architecture and under criterion C, National Register C or California 3. And the period of significance would be 26 to 39. So the database is actually telling us quite a bit about the context that we're using. And this is the final screen where the surveyor then selects their evaluation recommendation. So the three codes, these are California codes, but National Register, California Register, or the local code, and then a reason. So this is the only place in the entire database where we have the ability to actually type in something free text and make our professional recommendation that, yes, this is a very significant building for its representation of the Art Deco style for these reasons. And we make them very brief, since we do a lot of these, and use very standardized language. So the whole evaluation would take about 20 minutes for each property. For an individual property, we also do historic districts as well. And just to give you a sense of the type of resources that are evaluated and how they are evaluated, it's kind of fun to look back and see the different, sort of the wide range of resources. We obviously have a lot of really wonderful architect design modern residences in Los Angeles evaluated under the architecture context. And in Los Angeles, we have a lot of hillside neighborhoods that were developed in the 20s, and we're only able to do so with these sort of innovations in hillside infrastructure, public elevator towers in the 1920s, public staircases, retaining walls. These resources are all, we can identify these with the database. Even though they're not building resources, we can evaluate them under sort of residential development contexts. Los Angeles is a city of a lot of single-family neighborhoods, so we do have the ability to evaluate historic districts, which is really very easy with the database. It's a matter of just drawing a boundary around the parcels, and then every parcel within that boundary, you can select a contributor or a non-contributor, so you can see what your percentage of contribution is. And streetcar commercial strips, we have quite a bit of this in Los Angeles, although you wouldn't know it by looking at the city. It had a very vast network of streetcar lines, and we have some really wonderful streetcar-related commercial buildings and mixed-use buildings in the city. And in this case, in many cases, we want to select more than one context because something might be eligible under architecture. It might also be eligible under early commercial, and we have the ability to do that with the FIGS. We have a very a big wealth of garden apartment complexes, also very easy to evaluate with the database just by drawing a boundary, and it selects everything within that boundary. And then this is one of my favorite historic districts that was identified in South Los Angeles. We called it the Crenshaw-Sangnon Historic District. And this was an area that was developed after World War II, when the Japanese community was, they were allowed to come back to Los Angeles after being interned during World War II. They settled this small area in South Los Angeles, and the built resources really did convey their sort of cultural traditions with landscaping elements and in the design of the buildings themselves. So we were able to identify these based on a significance for landscape, horticulture, and also for its significance for its association with the Japanese-American community in Los Angeles. So we're really able to identify this culturally and ethnic significance, or districts with ethnic significance as well. So when the surveys are complete, they go through a pretty rigorous vetting process. All findings are reviewed by the city, and then they go through an independent review committee process. So there's a review committee with six members ranging from local advocates, somebody from the Los Angeles Conservancy. We have some local academics and just overall experts in architectural history in Los Angeles do vet all the findings. And then the city rolls them out to the public. And this is an old map that the city used for the first. This is the Group 1 survey, which took place in South Los Angeles. And this map was put online. It's a PDF map where the community can then scroll way in and look at the street and see, okay, this is where the historic districts were identified. These little push pins are our individual resources. This was a pretty cumbersome way to roll out findings because the maps were really big and the public had a hard time navigating them. So thankfully, the Getty has really invested a lot in trying to identify a new database that can be put online, which is called ARCHES. This, what you're looking at, is the city's existing GIS system, their planning system called ZEMIS. The hope is that all survey findings will then be flagged in ZEMIS, which is what all planners and staff at the Department of Building Safety, people who are actually issuing the permits, will then be able to go to ZEMIS. If a property has been identified by Survey LA, they will see that there's a little flag on there, and then that property will have to go through additional review before they can get a demo permit or an alteration permit. So the hope is to integrate all of the findings into ZEMIS. It has not happened yet, but should by the end of the survey. And then ARCHES is this a database that the Getty is developing, which is open source. Anybody could use it. You could use it in Portland with your survey data to then roll out findings to the public. And this is an example of what it looks like. They're using a beta version in England right now where people can scroll way in on the map and click on the findings and see what was identified, see a photo of it, see under what context it was evaluated, and why it's eligible. And I should note, I'm just going to go back to the ZEMIS page really fast just to talk about how the city is managing the rollout process. They made a decision pretty early on to not formally adopt survey findings. There will be no council adoption of the findings. There are no designations that will occur out of the survey itself. It's just information gathering to inform the planning process. And they really were worried about a big public outcry if they're going to be formally adopting survey findings and what that might mean to our environmental review process. So they made this decision to really just use the findings to inform city planning. So there's no informing of the public if their property has been identified by the survey.
In that case, Katie, then how can like a planner apply that data when you come to, say, pull a permit, like you're saying about for demolition or something? It seems like if it hasn't been adopted, then it doesn't exist yet from the planning side, or?
It's
impacting a decision, I guess, at that point.
It turns into discretionary review because the planner is then looking at the finding, and then they will then ask for a historic resource assessment of that property. So it doesn't automatically mean that they can't get their demolition permit, but they have to go through environmental review and do a historic resource evaluation of that property.
So they're able to use it as a tool, I guess.
Yes,
even
definitely.
Even though they haven't adopted it.
Yes. Okay. And even though the survey isn't complete, in those areas that are finished, they are already using those findings.
Okay.
Yeah. So that is really the conclusion of our presentation. Just wanted to end on a slide that identifies some of the key issues that really, looking back, sort of what were those major issues in starting the survey. Really, how do you identify the best use of pilot funds? If you have a small pot of money, what's the best way to use that? How do you develop a context-driven survey to develop a citywide context like they did in Los Angeles? And of course, defining and prioritizing survey areas rather than tackling the whole city at once, how do you identify smaller areas and prioritize those areas to make it more manageable? Of course, fostering ongoing public support, which is very important, and then identifying ways to use and integrate existing survey data. I know that Portland has an existing citywide survey, so then how do you take those survey findings and integrate them into the survey process? So happy to answer any questions that you might have about the presentation.
Well, great. Thank you so much for coming and sharing that with us. That's huge. As you know, we're in the process of just trying to figure out how we can possibly do this ourselves. And we've gotten some support from council to do a pilot program, which we're excited about. It's much more modest than the $5 million rollout you guys have, but we're looking at about $30,000, I think. Is that right?
$20,000?
Okay. $20,000. So we're going to do a couple of blocks in Portland. no, really, our goal is to try to figure out, you know, how we can best use that small resource to help us inform the bigger picture of what's going to be required, essentially. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're a lot smaller, geographically speaking, than LA is. Kirk has got a lot of experience actually doing this kind of stuff, too, so which is a great resource for us. So I think, you know, just trying to, you know, a lot of us aren't experts in this field. I know it's kind of a specialized thing. So understanding, you know, with modern databases and those types of resources at our command like you guys have, you know, what are ways we can make efficient use of that and in a data format, I guess, that's, you know, cross-platform that we can use our extensive volunteer networks, because we've got a lot of those actually here, and we've got couple of universities with architecture school programs and stuff that we can tap into for resources.
Right.
So, but you know, we don't want to send people out doing a bunch of stuff if we don't have, you know, the format set the way we want, because that'll just be a waste of time, I think.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, the hope of the Getty, you know, they really, even though they were focusing on Los Angeles, which is where they are located, they hope they would have a much larger application for this project. And the FIGS database has been used in other cities. The city of Denver just did a citywide survey using the FIGS.
So does Getty own the FIGS?
Actually, the city owns the FIGS, but they are just giving it to other cities to use. Oh. So there's no there's a contract, but I don't believe there's any sort of licensing cost to using it. The problem is now the version of ArcView that it uses is 6 years old. It's no longer supported by Esri. So there's some updating that needs to be done with the software, but I don't think that that's insurmountable. So that is an option, is to sort of take this methodology and use it in other cities. It has been done in other places, which is great. And that was really, I think, the Getty's hope, is that would happen.
Yeah, it seems like that would be really a compelling case for other cities if there was some sort of a standard, you know, essentially everybody was working toward. You know, mm-hmm. It's a huge win, actually. So what is can you explain the FIGS in a little more detail? I caught part of the acronym before you switched from that slide.
Sure,
so I hadn't
sure.
heard that term before.
It stands for the Field Guide Survey System, and it was developed by a company called North South GIS. I think that they have offices all over the place. It uses GIS as the basic framework, and so, you know, all the data that's collected is sort of populated into the actual parcel data tables. I'm not a GIS person, so the way I describe it to you is not the same as if someone with actual GIS knowledge would explain it to you. But, you know, because the data tables are then sort of in this Excel, you can put into an export it into an Excel network. You can put that into the city's existing database and just repair everything by parcel. So it makes it very easy to then share that data with other GIS databases. And I'm going to stop there before I speak out of school about GIS. But the way I understand it is that this is really, you know, thinking about the way we did surveys 5 years ago or 10 years ago, GIS seemed very revolutionary. And now that it's hard to imagine doing a survey without GIS. We just don't really do it anymore. And the way that tablet PCs are getting smaller and smaller and lighter and lighter, it really is the way to do the project and sort of eliminating all those forms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I've done some of the traditional HRA surveys like you're talking about, you know. And yeah, it's great. I mean, that you can have all this information where you go on Portland Maps all the time, and it's got a lot of the same stuff that you're talking about, you know, data right. building and tax information, all that stuff. So we definitely have it. Yeah.
I had a couple of questions just in terms of, kind of the public participation component, and even at the front kind of gate, so to speak, about how to kind of sell the project to the public. I mean, I know But just given kind of the regulatory environment in California, it can be a very sensitive topic. Obviously, with CEQA and the implications of a survey can be fairly significant impact on a particular property. And we've had a few instances here where historic district efforts have been stymied for a variety of different reasons. And there's some trepidation by the public in terms of that component. So how did LA kind of deal with that particular issue on such a massive scale? And were some neighborhoods more excited about it than others?
Overall, I would say the general mood about surveilling has been very positive. There certainly have been attorneys who are sort of all over this and really worried about what the implications would be for developers and property owners. But because the city made this decision to not actually formally adopt the survey findings, there really isn't much more of an impact than the CEQA impact already. So I think that they're selling it as this is a positive thing. If before you buy a building, you can go onto the database and actually see if it's already been identified by Survey LA, and you have that information at your fingertips. So whereas without the data, it would be a surprise for you. You might go to get your demo permit and for some other reason find out you have to do an EIR, you might have a resource. So they're really sort of pushing this. This is data. This is good data for everybody to have and sort of use and work with. It's better to be informed about historic resources than not. But that really is sort of specific to Los Angeles because we do have CEQA. So it might be a different animal here in Portland, for sure.
What is CEQA?
It's a California Environmental Quality Act. So it's our environmental law, which is very, very powerful. It's, in Los Angeles, almost every action is discretionary. So anytime there's any sort of demolition review, it's subject to California Environmental Quality Act. So they have to do, you're leaning in like you want to jump in here. Do you want
to? Oh, yeah. So the point of relevance here is that the California Environmental Quality Act equates any impact to a historic resource with an environmental impact.
Oh, okay.
So that is triggered whenever you're affecting a historic building.
Gotcha. That was one of my questions I had, was just what the designation process was there, because we're kind of in a challenging situation in Portland and the statewide, in that we're not allowed to designate new historic resources or districts without owner consent, and so it limits some of our ability. And there's kind of a stop point. I think it was 1980s or something. Anyways, from when that law was kind of clarified, and so we really don't have new historic districts going forward, or designations unless the owners have brought them forward or neighbors have agreed to do it. So.
Do you have a set percentage of what is required in terms of owner consent for historic districts?
Yeah, I think it's more than 50%.
Yeah, it's the national. Yeah, it's basically the national register. Because that is one of the components in Oregon, is that when a property is listed on the national register, it immediately receives whatever protections are in place for a particular jurisdiction. Whereas here in Portland, certain components of the code begin to apply to a resource as soon as it gets listed. And so the process you go through is the National Register process in terms of when you list a district. And so if you have 51% of the people on board, then great, you have a district. But there was a district just recently in the Buckman Historic District where, there were about 450 properties, and I think more than 50% of the people came through and said, we don't want it. And that, that doesn't happen very often across the country, as a matter of fact, when a district can garner that much opposition. And so that is something I think that weighs on our minds in terms of our ability to, how do we, the survey is great, and it's just how do we use it for planning purposes and to get people excited about the resources that they have. It's kind of the big dilemma. How has the data been used yet to get things listed, either by property owners or a neighborhood, let's say?
Not as much as you might think. We did have a case in South Los Angeles, which is very under-landmarked. There are very, very few historic cultural monuments, which is our landmarking program in Los Angeles, in South LA, but there are a lot of very significant resources. So when the findings did roll out, the council district initiated some landmark proceedings, and the owners they were notified, but they just either didn't know or they didn't mind, and so they did actually move forward with designation. So I think there are 6 or 7 individual district or individual buildings that were designated there. But in terms of historic districts, that hasn't been the case as of yet. We have such a staffing shortage right now for new historic districts that they've just put a stop on all new historic districts as of maybe 3 or 4 years ago. So there are about 12 or 13 historic districts in the pipeline. They're just sort of waiting. So I think that everybody just knows right now that adopting new historic districts is not viable. So they have the information. We've told them where the eligible districts are, but it's very unlikely that new districts will be designated as a result of the survey itself.
So as part of the survey, though, I heard you when you were talking too about like drawing boundaries around potential historic districts. So you guys are actually making recommendations of what could be a historic district and determining where that boundary might lie?
Absolutely. So okay. We identify the boundary, all the contributing and non-contributing resources within the boundary, period significance, context, everything. And there have been some neighborhoods who said, you know, now we have this data through Survey LA, can we use this for our historic district nomination? The city says, sure, if in fact we ever get around to doing more historic districts, you're welcome to use this data. They just don't have the staff to do it right now. So there's interest, but there's not the staff capability to actually do it.
And when you guys have a historic district, and this is a little bit off topic, but what benefits and then burdens come with those? I mean, is there a design review or things like that that then the properties are subject to? And is there additional fees and things that the property owners are required to pay as part of that process? That's kind of part of the issue that came up here with one Kirk Renzetta mentioned with the Buckman neighborhood is we had a recent bigger one that had went through and, you know, some of the property owners, I think, were surprised at how onerous some of the process could be for even simple projects. We've kind of rectified some of that, actually, in response. But in the meantime, this other historic district got kind of caught up in that, or potential historic district, and I think it turned off a lot of the property owners to not wanting to be held to a, you know, more bureaucracy and higher standard, I guess.
Right. Los Angeles has a very unique system where in every, they're called HPOZs, Historic Preservation Overlay Zones, every HPOZ has its own board that regulates what happens within that HPOZ, and it has its own preservation plan. And the goal of that really is to say, okay, in this historic district, we care about these modifications. And in other districts, like, we don't care about paint color, we don't care what you do to your landscape, but we really care about these other elements. So it really allows each HPOZ to identify what those significant changes are. There is an onerous process. You do always have to submit your application to the HPOZ board first. If it's just a minor change, it can probably stop there with the board. Otherwise, it goes to our commission. But we do have the Mills Act, which is a state program for property owners who live in a designated building, either in a historic district or an individual building. It's property tax abatement program. And property owners can enter into a contract where they get, you know, sometimes 60-70% of their property tax back in order to rehab, restore, maintain their historic building. That has been a very important tool to garnering support in historic districts. There is a financial incentive that can be offered to property owners. Without that, I think it'd be pretty hard to really sell the concept to property owners and historic districts. We are seeing so much demo and infill, really incompatible infill in historic districts, which I know that you are too in Portland. That also helps to get support, people who just don't want to see their neighborhoods change in such a negative way. So that also has been very helpful. But the financial incentive is really huge in getting support.
And so you don't actually have to be individually listed to get that?
You can be a contributor to a historic district.
Okay. Yeah. But non-contributors aren't eligible, obviously. So
exactly.
Okay. Interesting. Right.
So, I was going to change the subject a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. What other cities have used FIGS?
Denver has used the FIGS. They might be the only one who has actually moved forward and used it. So you could check in with them. I'm not sure how that all worked out. We made some presentations to them, and they took the database and ran with it. And I hope that's been successful. It was a couple years ago, so I haven't heard.
So have other cities taken the database or the system, and you haven't heard, or they haven't?
Just Denver. That's the only one who's. Others have asked about it and shown some interest in using it, but none have actually used it.
Have you worked with similar stuff, Paul, in archaeology?
Yeah.
You probably have more experience with this stuff than any of us in some ways. Just from,
I have a lot of GIS experience.
You know? Okay.
It makes perfect sense to do it this way. I think you would agree.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
And so Finks is the way that you collect it, and Arches is the way that the data gets sort of communicated to the public in its database?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So Arches is a very user-friendly, open source online resource where people can go and they can search by address, they could search by architect and see every building in Los Angeles that was identified, that was built by Rudolf Schindler. They can search by context or theme. So there'll be a lot of keywords that they can search by. It's a very user-friendly database. And Arches, too, like I said, is they're hoping can be used by anybody for their historic resource inventory.
So the FIGS information just comes in from the database, and then the Arches is kind of the translator that makes it user-friendly.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the Arches could probably be used with, it doesn't have to be the FIGS that then takes that data. Any data could be translated and used by Arches.
Okay.
Matt, have you been on the SHPO database very much? Like, do you know how our SHPO database compares with Arches and whether, you know, they've already got so much data in there and having a statewide database is nice, but I just wonder whether Portland would have to kind of go off and do their own thing, or?
I think the information is similar in content. I think that Arches is really ahead of the game in terms of presentation and accessibility and usability. This is something really that the Getty is looking to deploy, you know, worldwide, you could say, like through, World Heritage sites around the globe. So as a result, they necessarily are trying to develop a platform that's very, very supremely adaptable, you know, and malleable. So I'm thinking also of Wizard north of the border here. I mean, I think in both cases you have similar types of information, but it would just be a lot more about just the format and what the public would be able to access with ease versus what technically they could get to if they knew what they, every last detail of the program. Mm-hmm.
Just one more question.
Yeah, go ahead. Challenge, I think, for a survey is just the amount of data that's collected. And I know here in Oregon, it looks like the system was built around the same thing, where it's built around codes, basically. If you can, for a brick building or a concrete building, there are certain codes that if you enter into the database, it automatically gets populated. And so, you know, if you were to do a reconnaissance level survey in Oregon, you'd basically have 20 bits of information. You wouldn't have to write a sentence, basically. Now, when you shift that data over into a regulatory mode, there's not a lot for the planners to go on in terms of, besides a picture or two, in terms of trying to apply design guidelines, let's say. Obviously, there's probably more fields you can fill in to actually write a sentence. And but for Survey LA, what was kind of the threshold for trying to give the planners enough information from which to, you know, exercise the discretionary review?
Well, certainly, if someone were to move forward to designate a historic district, there'd be a much higher level of documentation that would be required. And one of the screens, or one of the many screens I didn't show you, is an architectural description screen. So for each individual resource, surveyors do need to go through and select a variety of checkboxes. Okay, it's a gabled roof, it's got this kind of siding, this kind of window. So there is a bullet point architectural description that can be populated from that data, which will help identify what those character defining features are and the original fabric. So there are other fields that you didn't see, but certainly there would need to be more information if they were to move forward with the designation and then regulate as part of the historic district process.
Okay. This might be kind of a silly question, but is it a requirement to actually, in your mind, go out and physically survey each resource versus, I mean, one thing being a practicing architect that comes up a lot more is I find myself on Google Street View just like going in, and it's amazing how much you can get off of there, actually, you know. So I didn't know if that's, but at the same time, you don't know exactly how real time that information is, and, you know, relative to the data.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times we will look on something at Google Street View and look at our survey photo, and it's like a different building. Mm-hmm. Things are changing so fast in Los Angeles, you just can't really rely on the Google Street View. It certainly helps
sometimes before the survey starts, we'll look at the preloaded data, so resources that have been identified by the public, and go look at a Google Street View and say, okay, this is still there, or, you know, just to get a sense of what it is. Mm-hmm. We still drive every single street, and there's, I think, no real, even with the type of imagery that you have online, there's no real way to get around that. Just with tree cover and, you know, things in front of houses and things changing so quickly, there's nothing like actually driving down the street and taking a look at everything. And you just can't really identify alterations. I think you're right. I think it is more efficient to do it that way as well.
Okay.
So we've all put hundreds of thousands of miles on our cars. But it's, but there's nothing that compares to actually being there and seeing the resources. And you're also a presence in the neighborhood, and people get to come out and ask you questions. You're sort of an ambassador for the project as well, which is a good thing.
Right. So you drive a friendly car, not something that looks threatening.
Exactly. People aren't always happy to see us. No matter what car we drive. But that's okay. It's to be expected.
Have you guys been able to stay on budget from the original $5 million, or how does that look?
It has definitely exceeded $5 million. We have used CLG grants for the project. Mostly those have been for developing context data tables, sort of smaller projects that have helped the survey itself. I would be curious to know what the actual dollar tag will be at the very end of the project. It will be more than $5 million, but that obviously was, you know, generally enough money to do the whole project.
And how many properties, again, was it in total?
880,000.
Okay, so, I mean, I guess that's one way to just do a quick math.
So you took a look at every property, but you only took information down
exactly.
On
right.
Percent. About what's been the percentage?
You know, I was thinking you might ask that, and I don't know. I'll be very curious to see at the end, you know, what percentage of resources were actually identified. I'm guessing it's somewhere in like the 5%, 5 to 10%. That's completely pulled out of a hat. I'm not sure, okay. But that's...
And that's individual and districts.
And districts. Okay.
Okay, maybe a tougher question. If you had $20,000 to spend, where would you prioritize it? I mean, would it be actually doing a small pilot survey, or would it be thinking about maybe just researching the FIGS and some of these other issues about, you know, how do you set up the database? You know, what's mm-hmm. the most efficient use to get us the furthest down the path, I guess, you know, in your mind?
Well, I thought you might ask that, too, and I actually did ask Janet Hansen, who's managing the project for the city, you know, if you could do this all over again, you had $20,000 to spend, how would you spend that money? And she said she would identify the historic context statement data table, so get the basic framework of the context statement. Don't worry about writing the narrative. Just identify what the context and themes are and the eligibility standards, because you need those standards to make the evaluations in the fields. Mm-hmm. Get your database in place, and then start to prioritize where you want to go first and what your plan will be. I think you really need a good rock-solid methodology first before you just go out and start surveying.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense. Does that make sense to you, Kurt?
And I think one of the other things is just to take a closer look just at the regulatory environment we have here in Portland and how the survey could, you know, best be used within that environment, and whether it needs to be changed or not, mm-hmm. Depending upon, you know, how folks, you know, whether folks think the existing system is working or whether or not it needs to be revised, so that there can be a better dovetail with the information that we do get, that it's going to be useful and that we're going to be able to kind of do something with it at the end of the day.
Right. We're doing concurrently a citywide survey for the city of Beverly Hills, which is a much smaller city, but a city with a very development-friendly city, as you can imagine. And they initiated the survey. They'd never done a citywide survey. And once the findings started rolling out and they realized how many resources they had, they really got sticker shock with that. And they're thinking of actually rewriting their ordinance to make everything ministerial. So there will be no discretionary process for permits at all, because they're worried that the survey data will be used to stall development. So that was a case where the survey, they had this idea, I think that you know, our team would find 10 really significant buildings and they would designate them and everybody would be really happy. And, you know, we came up with just 100. Beverly Hills is, everything was built by a notable architect. Everything is beautiful. And they really, once they saw the findings, just,
you know, their eyes got really wide and all the attorneys started texting each other from across the table, and, you know, it was really uncomfortable. So you definitely want to know, you know, sort of anticipate what, you know, what you will do with the findings when they come through, so you're not kind of left shocked and you know, unprepared.
Okay. Any other questions for?
I have just a brief question. Early on, Matt, I think you talked about your firm doing something with the in Salem with the Oregon State Hospital. What was that?
Oregon State Hospital was the rehabilitation.
I know what it is, but what did your firm do?
What did we do?
Yeah.
I personally was the sort of liaison to the Historic Landmarks Commission there. But mainly our body of work was architectural. So we were helping to do the exterior restoration for the main Kirkbride, formerly the J building, now back to being a U. And then there were some other historic buildings like the former crematorium that were being relocated on site. So we were providing architectural guidance on how to do that in a way that would maintain the historic significance of the area.
As part of that project, did you also look across the street, the dome building and the other ones?
Yes. So that was part of the other thing I did in addition to being a liaison to the Landmarks Commission was we helped craft some design guidelines for the entire campus. I mean, it sounds like you're pretty familiar with the site. So right as it was starting, there was a very quick National Register nomination, or not National Register nomination, put together pretty quickly that they didn't have a whole lot of time to do evaluation, the folks who put it together, and so everything was sort of deemed a contributor. And so the hospital didn't quite know what to do with that information, so they asked us to help draft some design guidelines that would help them manage the north side. I think ultimately they ended up going a slightly different route, somewhat like this Beverly Hills example, where we came with a very robust set of design guidelines that were closely tailored to the Secretary's standards, and I think the hospital chose to go a different way with that because of some of the activity they foresaw north of on the north half of the campus.
Great. Thank you.
I have one more question. So, I know you don't have your final budget done yet, but do you have a sense, a proportion of the final budget that will be spent on the actual survey versus putting together the database and the context and the structural part of it? Is there any way you can estimate that?
A good question. I would say that probably 1/5 of the budget went into the initiation phase,
and
then the rest went
to creating figs from
exactly.
The ground up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Anyone know how many parcels we have in?
Less than 880,000.
you said 200,000.
I think about 200.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, okay. All right.